I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there. Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. I'm always inspired by what someone creates out of their pain, their suffering, their challenges, the rejection, the divorce, the breakup, the job loss, like where something is born that is only found in that space. That like where Francis Weller talks about how there the soul dwells in the darkness. And I really think that it is in these moments that we are released in a way, that like through the pain, if we go into it, there is an aspect of us that is finally recognized, that is finally born, that has been maybe rejected or socialized to not even be paid attention to, or we had to leave behind to belong to the relationship or the church or the community. And so there's always something so profound that is created from those things and creations that help other people walk through that. And it can be a creation as simple as a food or a product or a service that is what we needed to make it through, or something that helped us sort ourselves out. And today's episode is a conversation with Amanda Goetz, who is the founder of House of Wise. And I love her as a human being. She's inspiring. She's motivational, but she's been through so much and she continues to sort of live her life out loud. And I wanted to have her on the podcast because her story is really inspiring. And what she's created from her pain and her suffering and her challenges. And she just like humanizes the actual human process, which is so weird to think of like humanizing the human process. But so much of us, so many of us experience the highlight reels of people's lives. And we don't see like the daily grind or the daily thing that creates the business that inspires us or whatever it might be. So before we get started with today's episode, please, wherever you're listening to this, subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you give it a 5-star review or a written review. That's such a simple way to help support the podcast. And here we go. Here's Amanda Goetz. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I've got Amanda Goetz here, founder of House of Wise, badass woman, entrepreneur, mom, kick ass, take over the earth. That's how I feel about what you do. So thank you for being here.
Wow, what an intro.
Yeah, not totally formal, but also like pretty representative of the sort of balance slash hustle that I observe in how you live your life, which I'll tell you more as we journey how much you've actually inspired our work and our workplace at Create the Love. So I'll share that as we go.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I was actually thinking back to the first time I listened to your podcast, and it was like episode 8 or 9 with Jason Gaddis.
Yeah, that's right.
And I remember sitting there listening. It was like titled Becoming a Relationship Grown Up or something. And he literally was speaking my current reality of going through a divorce. And it was just like, that's when I discovered you. And then I started listening. And then we obviously connected in real life. And yeah, so I can share a little bit of what got me to that point, because I think it's really, really a big part of my story and what I talk to a lot of women about, which is, so I'm from the Midwest, grew up in a town of 800 people.
Oh, first,
first generation college grad. Like when I go home, like sometimes they'll even change the sign outside of the library. It's one of those like letter signs that they still put up like letter by letter. And it's like, welcome home.
Yeah, we used to fuck with those and change them. So they said something dirty. Yeah, that was great. My mom would be like, did you and your brother change that sign? Anyway, sorry. Yeah, so they'll change it when you come home?
Sometimes. That has
happened.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I went to a really small town, small high school, you know, less than 50 people. So, you know, small town vibes. And I'm a first generation college grad. And my parents got married. I think they were 18 and 19. And so I kind of lived by that subconscious like map for my life. Mm-hmm. And so I got engaged at 19, in college, married at 21. And then I realized that I wanted to start to figure out who I was. I wanted to grow and transform, but I didn't even know what that meant. I had just been living by like what the church, like I grew up Catholic, what my parents, what my family all expected of me. But I had no clue what I kind of expected from myself. And so moved to New York, and the physical departure away from everything I knew was really big for me. And started living in New York and started growing and transforming. And what happened was in this relationship, I was the only one transforming. And I remember I kept asking for us to like do new things together or try new things. And I remember one time my partner saying like, where's the girl I married? And I'm like, she's so far gone. I'm now discovering like all this, these parts of me. And like in his defense, like the girl he married was a super submissive, wanting to be a domestic, you know, caretaker. And then I started discovering like how powerful I was and what I could do in the business world, and that those were not mutually exclusive, that I could be a mom, but I could also be a CEO or lead marketing at a global company or whatever. And so I started asking for new contracts, new boundaries. And it was right around that time that I heard the episode with Jason, and it was all about how women will get to the point where they've already done all the work and then they'll ask for a divorce. And at that point, it's way too late because they've, you know, completely decaffected from the relationship. And so I had never gone to therapy before. And I told myself, you know, I had 3 kids under the age of 4. So I was going through postpartum.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
I was going through trying to do all the things at the same time. That's
You know.
Wow. 3 Slightly. Kids under 4.
Mm-hmm.
Going through a divorce in New York City. What was it like? I wanted to understand this. What was it like to move from a city of 800 people to New York from like a how you saw the world 19, everyone around you sort of living a similar life or living a similar path, like get married by 21, do that. And then you move to this other place. Yeah. And I'm just curious, what was that effect? And then starting therapy. So curious if you could walk me through that.
For me, it just felt like there were endless possibilities of who I could become. And I wanted to try them all on to see which shoe fit. Like, in New York City, like even the sex positive community, there's so much to like learn and understand, and even just hearing other people. Like I have a friend that went to dom school, and like just hearing about the psychology behind that,
right?
Like, that is fascinating to me. And it just, who I am today is not who I'm going to be a year from now. And to me, that is the coolest fucking thing. And I think for me, looking at my past, I kept trying to be the Amanda everyone knew and loved, who was like a people pleaser and you know, felt everyone's emotions. And all of a sudden I stopped doing that. And yes, I lost a lot of people in my life, but I was gaining myself and learning who I was. So yeah, to me, New York City opened my eyes in a way that was so cool. But yeah. And so then I started going to therapy, and my first therapy session, I'll never forget. Like I go in, I have no clue what to expect. And I sit down, and like before she even says anything, I'm just crying my eyes out. You know, I just had all this pent up emotion, and I finally like blubber out like I want a divorce. And so I get that out, and then we start talking, and I was saying how like I was so angry that I'm feel like I'm doing everything. Like I feel like I'm doing the childcare, and I'm doing, you know, caring for the home and all this stuff. My therapist looked at me and she said, "What if you started being proud of all you're capable of?" And just saw how superhuman you are doing all the things that you're doing. She's like, if you become a single mom, that's also going to be there. So why don't you start being a single mom now, right now, in your head? And so what happened was, so she said that, and then she said, you just had 3 kids in a span of 4 years. Let's work on your stuff first before you make any decisions to change your life. And so I said, okay, I will do those 2 things. I will go to therapy for, you know, 6 months, twice a week, make sure that I am in a stable place, and also know what I contributed, because like takes 2 to tango. Like I definitely know that there were like traumas that I brought to that relationship and why I saw it, the dynamics that I did. And I started to be proud of myself. And the thing that was crazy is I was doing all this stuff and I was happy again, because I was like, holy fuck, look at all that I can do. I can like work in New York City, you know, lead marketing at a big company, take care of my 3 kids, navigate it all. And so I was happy, but that was independent of the relationship I was in. And so when I filed 6 months later, it was blindsiding. And I'm very thankful that we had over a decade of growth, like of being together, that like we see each other as family. And now we're so far removed that we consider each other friends. Like we were able to, you know, get through COVID together. We now co-parent together. My kids have co-parents now, whereas before they just had an angry mom all the time. So yeah. And so I'd much rather them have a 50% happy, fulfilled mom than 100% really resentful, angry mom. And so, yeah, COVID hit. I'm like still going through the divorce. Everything is kind of, I worked in the wedding industry, so it was turned upside down. And something that was near and dear to my heart over the course of my divorce was how stress affects your body and what alcohol was doing to me. And so I literally would see a one-to-one correlation with drinking the, like, you know, mommy 2 glasses of wine at night that like is celebrated everywhere. Right. And then the next day having like 2 to 3 anxiety attacks throughout the day.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay. So that's when I got really, really into like the head gut connection and why is what I'm eating affecting my like mental health. And then I started using cannabis, and I felt such shame and stigma around that because, you know, here I am an executive at a company. Here I am a mom of toddlers in the Upper West Side of New York City, and I'm using CBD and microdosing THC. And go ahead.
That's interesting because you think of like if you were on Ativan or something, people would be like, oh, me too. Or like it's so normalized. And not to make it wrong because it's not wrong, but it's so normalized that someone has a prescription medication that sort of numbs that stuff or treats that stuff. But if one said cannabis, it's like all of a sudden you're in the wire and you're like, you know, that you're a dealer or something, you know, like the perception of it then, which I mean, there's so much to the propaganda that positioned marijuana and cannabis in a certain perspective.
Yep. So much there that, yeah, it's like a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Let's deconstruct that on a Netflix documentary, you know, yeah. But yeah, please.
But yeah. And so COVID hits, I see my mom friends drinking more alcohol than I've ever seen them drinking. And I realized that when I would have a one-to-one conversation with someone where they trust me, they know who I am as a person, they would be like, oh, wait, so what are you taking? How are you using it, et cetera? So coupled with the fact that when I was exploring CBD, FDA does not regulate CBD. They don't want to touch it. And so there are a lot of bad products on the market. Mm-hmm. And some that are placebo, some that don't work, and some that actually are don't control the THC counts, et cetera. So COVID hits and I decide to do the like least popular thing, which is I decide to start a venture-backed business while I'm homeschooling three kids full-time in a COVID house in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I love it. You really have a penchant for your capacity. Like you're like, let's crush it. I love it. I love it because it's so inspiring. You know, I'm like, I don't have any kids. And I'm like, man, how am I going to hold it all up this week? Then I see your Instagram story and I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay, I better go.
Yeah. Well, I hope that people like also, and I do share like full disclosure, I'm supposed to be with you in that room in Las Vegas, but yeah. I had an anxiety attack yesterday because my body had taken too much. And so I'm now becoming acutely aware of what my boundaries are. But yeah, so I raised a round of financing, started House of Wise to create obviously CBD products that work and that women can trust and a brand that women can kind of open their ears to and say, maybe there is an alternative. Maybe I don't have to reach for that glass of wine at night. But even more so, to me, the mission is all around like the thing that we were just talking about, which is shame and destigmatization of all the things. And to sit here and to say, I've gone through a divorce. I've gone through fertility treatments. I've had miscarriages. I'm now dating as a, you know, single mom. I'm owning my sexuality, not for a man's pleasure. Like all of those things, society, you see it. Like some people have a reaction to that, especially like around sex positivity, et cetera. Like there is so much rooted in female pleasure and how that has been part of a patriarchal narrative that it's for a man's pleasure. And so you mm-hmm. see it like when we talk about masturbation or we talk about anything, women get uncomfortable because they feel like they're supposed to be like feeling shame around that. And so I want to break those stigmas and break those narratives so that women feel less in the dark when they're going through something that every woman will experience. Like women will experience, Esther Perel says, like every relation, you'll have two, you know, every, you'll have, what is it? Two marriages. Like sometimes it's the same person, right? Like you will go through these big things. And if we keep it in the dark, you have no reference point of how to navigate these things. And you feel so alone.
Yeah, so true. And I think, you know, so much of pleasure in general has been outcome driven, but more so that female pleasure, if it's a positive byproduct of the intimacy, yay. But if it's not, you know, like everything's really centered around and has been, not always, but still certainly is, because it's so programmed in us. It's much like how you're talking about, like you grew up in this Midwestern town, you got married by a certain age. And if you watch the hereditary paths, I mean, that's what everyone does. And so then you move to New York, you have this, you're like, I'm ready to do everything. There's so much possibility, because if you don't see possibility, you don't see your mother have boundaries, you don't see your parents even talk about healthy sexuality. Like, I think one of the most interesting things about the sort of religious framing, or what the religious lens of sexuality has done, is it has created this fear that if we talk about sex or educate about sex, we will become sexual, as opposed to we are sexual and being educated mm-hmm. about it will empower our sexuality. Like, I hear what you're saying, and I think it's beautiful, because it's this desire to shatter all of the identities that were handed to you, and be like when you do that, you kind of go, well, what's possible in my relationships? What's possible mm-hmm. in my business? What's possible? Like, if I wasn't taught that to be sex positive is bad, or anything sexual is bad, or masturbation, you're going to go to hell because you double click your mouse, you know, like, what the fuck is that? Like, do you know how many people then have shame because they jerk off in their room and then they think they're going to hell every time they come, but then they can't help but want to do it again, because that's the nature of being a human. You know, it's like, I just look at it all and I'm like, man, if we didn't buy into everything we were taught, we could do anything. We could create anything. And I'm so inspired by the journey that you continue, because, you know, I met you when you were working in the wedding industry, and as you were going through that process, and it's been really amazing to watch you birth this company.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the shattering of the identities, it's like we have to shatter them and then make room for the identities we choose, and to hold multiple of them. Because if you think about, so as a marketer, we learn about generational imprinting, like what was on TV, on the radio, what was the lyrics of music when you were imprinted as a kid, which is like when you're like 2 through 5, maybe even before. And so you do that because that's the like subconscious of then the next generation of who's buying and whatnot. That's like a marketing trick, right? When you think about the people who raised us, what was on TV? It was Leave It to Beaver, 1950s, like male dominated household, right? And now we are like, my generation, I'm 36. We're in this middle weird ground of like, female empowerment is on the, like WAP is playing on the radio, but but like, we haven't been given the tools to hold these multiple identities. And so we talk about this a lot of like honoring each of your identities as like, I am a CEO, you know, I'm a VC backed founder, whatever you want to say, like, that's my like business side. Then I have a maternal side to me. Like, I love being a mom. And just because I am aggressive in a business sense does not mean that that is a flow through to everything. Like, I am a very like soft mom and very loving. And then there's my sexual side. And what we talk about a lot with our community is honoring the transition, because there's no way in hell you can literally flow from one of those identities to the other seamlessly.
Not without role playing.
Right.
Like, you play CEO, like, I got this shit, no problem.
Right. Yeah. That one I can snap into very easily. Yeah. But like, I remember we were at an event in LA with our in-house sex therapist, Dr. Kate, and she, you know, we had a conversation and everybody walked in and they were super timid and they were like nervous to talk about things. And then Kate and I start talking about sex in a very just like pragmatic way, like you said. Like, what if we just talked about the fact that this is healthy part of your health? Like, this is a health and wellness conversation. Like, having an orgasm releases oxytocin and boosts your serotonin. Like, what if we actually started talking about it in that way, that frees you up to start to ask questions, because now it's coming from a lens of this is good for me, not this is shameful, right? Mm-hmm. And this mom, this sweet mom, she's in the back and you could tell that she was timid. We get through the whole conversation, we start asking questions and people are asking all different kinds. And she raises her hand and she's like, how do I go from mom mode where I have a toddler, like I'm breastfeeding, like I feel like my body is theirs. And she's like, to like, I want to attack my husband. I want to enjoy anal. Like she was just like, I want that side of me too, but I feel like I've lost her. And so that happens, and it happens for like multiple reasons. It happens because of hormonal changes, right? That's very real after you have kids, but it happens because of what society expects of you. If we look at sex as utilitarian, that it is for either a man's pleasure or to procreate, which is what the religious norms kind of are for, right?
Yeah.
Then how dare you still be a sexual being if you've already had your kids?
Yeah, moms can't be sexual. What are you talking about?
Right. And so we went on to talk about honoring the transition of like creating your Superman booth where you are going to, for me, it's like if I'm going to go on a date, I go take a bath, I play a playlist, I pop a sex gummy. Like I have a routine that signals to my body that mom mode is over and I get to be the other part of my identity. And that those two, three, four, five, whatever amounts of identities you want to have can all coexist in the same person. And they're up to you to honor each of them independently.
Yeah, it reminds me so much of that show where all the gay men come in and dress everybody. It's such a good show. What's it called?
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy?
Yeah, but do you remember they did a new revamp of it? They were like, it's recent.
Oh,
it
had, yeah.
It's such a good show, but maybe that's the same title as it had now. I can't remember, but
I think it's the same title.
Yeah, and it's got a great group of men in it. They're hilarious.
They're incredible.
Yeah, and they sort of go into these people who have sort of settled into one identity or in, I hate to use this word, but in a lot of ways, like sort of resigned or given up on their expression, their vibrancy, their joy, their light, or they've stopped taking, and again, I'm careful with my words, but like stop really taking pride in their appearance. And of course, it's so easy to fall in to those spaces or identities that said like you're a mom, you can't be sexual, or you're a CEO, you can't also be a mom, or, you know, like all these things. Yeah. And I love what you're inviting, that there's also ritual for the transitions and both ands, and there's all this space, because so much of the judgments that occur are to keep us in these boxes that other people have been in. So of course, like if you're part of a religious community and you're starting to, you know, get a little swagger after you have a kid and they're like, yo, we lost our swagger. Get your swagger out of here. What the fuck are you doing? I don't think we realize, because it's often so subtle and it's done with the threat of not belonging, even just that it exists implicitly in the way that the community operates or the human system operates. And so we don't even realize that we're self-abandoning till we're carrying things like anxiety, depression. Like we don't even realize that we are, because it's so normal. You know, I think of like Utah, no judgment to the Mormons. But I should say and it has the highest prescription rate for antidepressants. Now, of course, correlation doesn't mean causation. However, one might postulate that self, that repression of self, and I'm not saying all Mormons repress themselves, but people in extreme religion do, especially with a lot of principles and ways of being and values that are sort of shared that suppress human behavior. It's like, if we have to do that in order to survive into our community, it's like, then you have a, I remember one retreat I did, there's like a couple 40-year-old newly divorced Mormon moms from the center of Utah came to it. I got to tell you, they were like the most fun. They had just, they were both had kid, two or three kids, and they have such beautiful energy, and you could see this light coming out of them, and they were now sexual beings, and they were, and I was so inspired by their sort of rebellion, and just their ability to do the same as you're saying. But I love that you're inviting ritual in the transition. I think that sort of honors the sacredness of the honoring of what you're choosing.
Yes. I think intention is everything, right? And that you're making the intention, like there's a reason why, like the way our gummies work are you pop one and then it activates like 30 to 45 minutes later. And first and foremost, like you popping that sex gummy or strength gummy, that's a signal to yourself that you've now told yourself, this is important to me. I am going to make space for it. And that's the hardest thing to do as a mom, as a woman in general. Like we have been taught to be selfless, right? And self-care, I have many thoughts around like self-care and how it's been kind of just like made into a meme, if you will, but like,
but about baths.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about pedicures and baths, but you are saying to yourself that you are worthy of this mm-hmm. time. And that's an act of self-love. Like
yes,
I am
agreed.
Worthy of getting a workout in because my body keeps me going every day. I am worthy of like being intimate, whether it's with myself or a partner. Like I am worthy of feeling that pleasure. And that's the like switch that I'm seeing women have, is that these products open up a conversation around maybe they weren't feeling worthy of that before and why, and getting curious of that. So that's kind of been what we've been working on for the past year.
Yeah. So explain to people, what your company is, how, like, I know you started it from that space of you started to explore cannabis, and then were you starting to just experience a lot of benefit from it? Were you just, because then it led, because even your gummies, they're not THC gummies, they're CBD no. gummies. So yeah, just maybe walking us through what inspired you to start it, and then what it really is, and what sections or like whatever someone might be exploring or wanting to be intentional about what you're working on too.
Yeah, so House of Wise is a luxury CBD business, but our products, we have gummies and drops, and we launched a sex serum as well. They're all designed with active ingredients, and CBD is the carrier. And so when you learn about CBD, we have an endocannabinoid system inside of our bodies. Like we have cannabinoids inside of us, and the properties of cannabinoids are basically like binding agents. They help amplify, and inside of us, our ECS is kind of air traffic control for our central nervous system. And so that's why taking CBD helps to either bring up an understimulated central nervous system or bring down an overstimulated. And what we did was CBD, after the Farm Bill was passed, like was everywhere with no regulation. And so there are a lot of people, especially in the Midwest where I'm from, who just put up a whole barrier. They're like, I don't understand it. It's everywhere. Like, I don't trust it. It's drugs. It's marijuana.
Yeah.
Right. And so I wanted to take a different approach and speak to the problems women are having, and men. Like, we obviously have tons of men buying our products, but it's like degree deodorant, right? It's strong enough for a man, but made for a woman.
I love it. I do got to say, every time I take, because I take the stress gummy, I take the sleep one. I haven't tried the strength one. And I haven't used the sex one yet, but those will all be engaged soon. What I love is whenever I open the stress gummy one, on the back it says like a wise woman. What is the line?
Yeah, it's like a wise woman takes control of her stress.
Yeah, and I was like, hell yeah, she does. Like I don't. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
It's not like it's, you know, wrapped in soy or estrogen, you know, like the, and they're tasty and I do like them and they help. You know, I had more recently been managing a lot of anxiety and they are part of the strategy of how I do that.
Yeah, same. And for me, I wanted to create products like you kind of just touched on all four of our pillars: sleep, sex, strength, sleep, sex, stress, and strength. are our four pillars, and they all have active ingredients. So like the stress one is L-theanine matched with CBD. And the thing people don't realize is CBD, when it binds with an active ingredient, you have kind of this entourage effect. You feel the active ingredient more and you don't need as much. So our strength gummy, for example, is not as much caffeine, because if I take a pre-workout, I'm jittery. It's way too much caffeine for me. I don't like to drink caffeine. And so we cut the caffeine in by like a fourth of what a normal pre-workout is. But when paired with CBD, you feel the effects of it. And so it's marketing as the outcome or the function you're looking for. And CBD happens to be a part of it. But when you speak to the function, people are let their guard down a little bit, because you can say, hey, if you're not sleeping well, read thousands of testimonials of people who are now sleeping well, because I feel like I'm doing a marketing masterclass, but, but then you talk to the function first, that gets them excited, because that's a need that they need to be met. And then,
yeah, like
and then
the problem you solve and then how you solve the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true, because so much is, we put up our wall because we have been sold this idea that anything associated with cannabis is totally illegal and associated with criminals and addicts and all those things. And CBD is such it's not addictive at all, right?
Nope.
It has no addictive properties. It's not psychoactive.
Non-psychoactive, right. We get that question a ton. They're like, can I take this around my kids? I was like, I would never create something. I'm a mom of three. Like, I would never create something that moms couldn't take. And the gummy is bigger in size. And our head chef, the woman who helped us, we have a team of chemists who help us figure out the formulas. And then we have this amazing head chef, Mika, who they all taste very unique and very good. Like, culinary excellence was important to us, but they're bigger because I want it to stop you in your tracks. This is not like a little like Flintstone gummy vitamin. This is a like 2-bite thing, again, that goes with intention, where you stop and you say, I'm having my gummy right now because I notice I need it, whether you're feeling stressed. And for me, like when I realize that it's time, like I need a gummy, that's usually when I'll like meditate or something. I'll like sit down, have the gummy, and then I'm like, okay, I've got about 30, 45 minutes. But it's this beautiful snowball effect of you're first signaling to yourself from an emotional standpoint that you need this and it's time to have this.
I love that. And so now what's the next step? Do you have any future launches planned?
So now, I mean, we are not even a year old. Our first birthday is coming up. So
that's so crazy to think of.
It is insane. And so
I feel like I've watched it happen and I'm like, it feels like it's been around now for years, but it's not even a year.
I know. Trust me. I know. And people expect us to have our shit figured out more than like a 1-year-old company normally does. But I think that that's good if people think that we're way more further along. But
it's true.
Like I'm building in public. And for anybody that's never heard that term, it's a very like tech VC term. But like I share what it's like to build the company outwardly.
Yeah, you do. Your stories are real. They're not like, hey, I'm crushing this and I'm crushing this. It's like, this is my human experience. And I was crushing it yesterday and today I'm being crushed. Like you're very... the other thing too, I wanted to mention that I shared at the start is like when we were communicating via email and you're like, oh, we take a mental health week off next week. I was like, that's such a good idea, because I find with the people I work with, I'm like, hey, take the week off or take vacation. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they check their email or they check or they're messaging me. And I'm like, why are you messaging me? Like, leave me alone. And I don't want to talk to you. You're on vacation. And so I was so inspired by that, because if the business is shut down, then no one can communicate. Like there's not a task or a responsibility.
Yeah.
So we did that. We actually did it for 3 weeks and we had never done that. And it's really inspired that we're going to do a week every quarter just so everyone has a forced time off. And it's just we also did it at mine too. So we took a week off at the beginning of November, and you know, that startup life of like, it's like go, go, go all the time. And you can't really preach mental health or emotional wellness and not actually practice it. And I think it's like such a, in a way it's so interesting because to say we're taking a week off is so counterculture to tech or to venture world.
Yeah. And it is difficult when you are doing something that is unfamiliar as a VC-backed business. VCs are literally at their core designed to spot patterns.
Yeah.
And I want to like imagine a world where the 9-to-5 like was not created. Like think about it. That happened in the Industrial Revolution when Ford Motor Company needed to know how many widgets or whatever were being created an hour so they could determine how many people were needed to make how many cars. Okay, so that's like the origin of the 9-to-5. We sit at a computer. It is not quantifiable. Like, how do you make quantitative assignments of your work? You don't. You have a really clear goal that you're marching towards. And if you hit your goal, it doesn't matter how you work. And for me, the biggest revelation was when I was going through my divorce and I had, you know, on the weeks that I had my kids and I was working, you know, at a big tech company, I would go in and I know myself, like I know my cortisol levels are through the roof in the morning. I'm a morning person. That's when my flow state happens the easiest. And so I would crank for 3 straight hours. And for me, getting into my flow state for 3 hours is like a normal person's 8 hours of work of, you know, distracted, bopping around, right? So then at 3:30, 4 o'clock, when my kids are super young and go to bed at 6:30, I'm out the door. I'm like, see ya. And everybody was like, that sets a really bad tone. And I'm like, what is setting a bad tone? Is it like I'm hitting my goals that you're
tone?
Right. I'm hitting my goals that you're giving me. If I'm underperforming, that's a separate conversation. And so now I get to build something from scratch that actually like acknowledges that all of this stuff that we've been operating in, these like 9-to-5 or frameworks, that's all bullshit. It was created by someone somewhere. And so how do I empower, we're mostly women on our team, but in general, how do I set a new standard for what it means to be a VC-backed business? And like, I still get shit from like, I have guy founder friends. Like just last week, one of my very well-known founder friends was like, yeah, but you post pictures at the pool at 3 p.m. I was like, yeah, because that's when my cortisol dips and that's when I need to recharge from 3 to 4 o'clock. And I'm like, but I've already gotten all my work done. And why does that matter? And like, right. What, like, but his like innuendo was that like people won't take me seriously as a founder because of what I'm posting. And I'm like, let's look at my numbers. If my numbers aren't performing, that's a different story,
right,
but they are.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so fascinating to me because that I used to work in the corporate world within medicine and pharma. And I remember they'd be like, oh, do you want to move to the head office? And I'm like, hell no. It's like, you guys got to be there at 7 and you have to leave. It was that culture where you leave when your boss leaves because you can't leave before your boss leaves because God forbid you have more balance than your boss who grew up in a generation that avoided their home often, not always. Yeah. And I'm like, I think about that if like there's no faster way for your soul to die than to go to a job from 8 to 5 or 8 to 8 or whatever that you're not passionate about, that you're shamed if you somehow need balance. Like the fact that we need to ask permission to go for lunch, to do, you know, it's like, it's so bananas to me, but it's so normalized till now. And the idea even that someone might look at that you're at the pool at 3 and be like, ugh, that's awful. I can't believe it. I'm not backing this. You know, like it's, as opposed to being inspired by, but I think it's because we resent the balance. We resent that we're not choosing that thing for ourselves. And when I look at like one thing that we do at Create the Love is when we now have another woman going on mat leave is in Canada, you get 1 year for maternity leave. And I have both Canadian and American employees. And, you know, regardless of where they live, they get a year. And what I've done, which when I tell other friends, they're like, why would you do that? Like, that costs way more money. Is I pay them their full salary for the whole year.
Yeah.
And the reason I do that is I thought to myself, like, what would it be like to live in a world where we honored that maternal on a different level? Like, 1 year of mat leave is great already in Canada, but what happens if you didn't have to think about also if you're only getting 50% of your salary right. from the government? Like, what are you supposed to do? And so I thought, okay, well, this will cost more money as a company, you know, quote unquote, now. But I actually think what it does is it garners love, trust, community, you know, and most people will be like, well, then you can get exploited. It's like, yeah, if I believe I can, if I operate in that world that I'm trying to save money on my employees' mental health while they're being a mom and connecting with their child, you know, and I would offer a similar, whatever the similar male extent of that would be. And it's such a radical thing, but to me, it sort of feels like logical, you know, in some ways, you know?
Yeah. Like I, because, so we have a 70% async work culture and a 30% synced, which
what
means,
does that mean?
So async means it can happen. Anybody can be working at different times. Like it's happening asynchronously, different times. Synced means it has to happen at the same time.
Okay,
so
cool.
We have touch points like once a day to make sure that, like, you know, if somebody needs something from somebody else, they can get it urgently. But what this does is it frees up 70% of your time to do your best work when you can do your best work. Some people are morning people. Some people are night owls. And going back to that whole like multiple identities thing, like you can honor the fact that we are humans first. Like we have desire for interpersonal relationships. We want to go, you know, go for a run midday. And I think the silver lining of COVID was it started that conversation of mental health, like in this like work-life integration where they're not separate anymore and kids are on your laps and all those things. But you feel the pull right now. Everyone is trying to go back to where we were with the same norms. But for most women, those norms are gone. They've gotten a taste of
totally
what it
agree.
Means to not miss doctor's appointments, to be able to go play with their kids from, you know, 3 to 4 p.m. And I'm like, okay, how do we continue to just call bullshit on things that don't make sense? And we have a very open culture where it's like, if you need to take a mental health day, you should feel freedom to say that.
100%.
And you're not asking permission. There's no permission granted. Like
that's
if you're going on
yeah.
vacation, there's no permission. Sure, put it on a calendar so people know if you're going to be out and can't answer something. But like it's a very flat organizational structure and you're an adult. Like you know your goals, you know what you're working towards. Like do your thing. And if you're not hitting your goals, that's a separate conversation. But it takes a lot of operational excellence that I don't think a lot of companies care to like, they'd rather, it's about control over outcomes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting to think like you're not requesting vacation, you're telling us when you're going so that we can support your desire to go on vacation. That's such a different way somatically, like your body just feels different knowing that you're not like fawning and going to your boss and like, can I take these 2 weeks off? Now, granted, that doesn't mean you can't have them be like, hey, actually, that week is going to be pretty challenging. However, how can we make it work? You know, like at least that there's space for discussion. It's so radical, but it shouldn't be radical. And I love what you said that COVID got us a taste. Like I've never worked in an office. I've always had a sort of territory job and then, you know, entrepreneur now. But So I've always worked remotely. I've always worked with people at different, you know, in different places. And I remember once when I accepted a job when I was really young to work at this retail place where I had to go in every day. I was like, I quit within 3 days and I went back and asked for my old job back. And my boss was like, you just quit. And I'm like, yeah, I want to come back. I tasted the other side. It's not great. And my boss was like, okay, welcome back, which took a lot of humility. And I look at now and it's like, I kind of think it's similar in so many ways of, okay, well, before we'd say to your boss, can I work remotely? And your boss would be like, oh, I don't think we can make it work. Mm-hmm. But what COVID's done is said they had to. Well, look at what happens when people have to. It can happen and it can work. And you know, the research definitely demonstrates that people are not more productive going into work from 9 to 5. They're actually usually productive at home and, you know, listening to music and doing whatever. And there are times when you need to get in person to have meetings and all those things. But I think it's just indicative of like when there's a motivation, we can actually do anything. Like I look at how much we've rallied government people to solve quote unquote COVID. Mm-hmm. We could solve so many things if we had the same urgency, which we should have. And so it's always such a bullshit excuse to say we can't, or we don't have the resource, or we don't have this. And it's like, I just think it's so, it's like when it's in line with profit, we have motivations, or when mm-hmm. it's in line with productivity, we have motivation. And it's such a different thing to prioritize the humanization of the people we work with. And then that lead to actually more productivity, maybe not more profit, maybe more profit though, but you have humans in a different state. And if you have humans in a different state, then where they're in a state of gratitude and appreciation for the community and the connection that the work provides. And like your workplace has inspired some serious policy differences at ours. So I'm very grateful mm-hmm. because you've really modeled it and gave a solution. I didn't even think about shutting your business down for a week. And it's like, after I heard you do it, I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, that's dead. Why didn't I do that?
But that's the thing with all of this, right? Because there aren't people modeling what it means to be a mom and sex positive and a, you know, executive. There's not people modeling what it means to build a culture around people first over profit, right. Which the profit comes. That's the crazy thing, because right. when you create space for people to do their best work on their own terms, they do even more, and they do it in a way that you didn't even know was possible, because you've been putting these like bowling alley bumper pads on them for the whole time, and they can only go within this lane, you know? And you're like, well, you're not going to fail because I put in the bumper pads, but like, you know, you're just going to stay right here in this tiny little space. Whereas they can now be inspired in so many other ways because they're working at their best selves.
Amen. Amen. Well, I'm so grateful that you took the time to share with us about your business, your life, your transformation, what is possible when we break free of the identities and we allow ourselves to be the creators of them rather than the inheritors of them, and reminding us to make ritual and time and ceremony and intention. And where can people find more of you? And also Housewise.
Yeah, so I share kind of the behind the scenes of my mom life and builder life on Instagram. So at GetsAM, I share more of the like business stuff, like what it's like how to raise a round of VC funding and all that stuff on Twitter. And then houseofwise.co if you're interested in trying the products.
Yeah, and your spelling of your last name for people listening is GOETZAM. And that's your at yep. for Instagram. Perfect. Yep. Well, thank you so much. So
thanks,
appreciative.
Mark.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If this episode resonated with you, one of the best ways to support the show is to go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any more. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or share the episode with your community on Instagram or whatever social place you like to hang out. This helps get it into more people's ears, and I'm so grateful for your support always. Thanks again for tuning in. Much love.